Welcome to Chirosphere, where we talk about all things chiropractic and some things not so chiropractic. I'm Dr. Ray Foxworth, your host for Chirosphere and CEO of ChiroHealth USA, the network that works for chiropractic. Today, I'm excited to introduce you to a true maestro in the world of customer and employee experience, Joey Coleman. With an illustrious career spanning over two decades, Joey's been the go-to consultant for organizations like Whirlpool, NASA, Volkswagen Australia, Principal Financial, and Zappos, where they need to elevate their customer and employee interactions. Joey's expertise lies in turning one-time purchasers into lifelong customers and reducing turnover while increasing employee engagement. His acclaimed books, Never Lose a Customer Again, which I have an autographed copy, and Never Lose an Employee Again, you need to send me that one, offer invaluable strategies and tactics for building lasting relationships and fostering loyalty. As the founder of Design Symphony, he specializes in creating unique and attention-grabbing experiences for clients and team members alike. From outreach materials to brand identities, his creative strategies have garnered buzz and loyalty around the globe. Beyond his professional endeavors, his adventurous spirit has led him to explore 52 countries on all seven continents, including activities like skydiving, mountain biking down volcanoes, you're not well, Joey, and serenading on the Ponte Vecchio. I have to tell you, as a Mississippi boy, I had to look that one up. And for those that don't know, it's the first segmental arch bridge built in the West, which crosses over the Arno River at Florence, Italy, and it was completed in 1345. And we can't get roads to last for 15 years. Go figure. So welcome, Joey. And I mentioned you serenaded on that bridge. Do we get a serenade today?
You know, Dr. A, maybe by the end of the conversation, sure. But I am super excited to be here. Thank you for that generous introduction. And yes, the Ponte Vecchio is by far my most favorite bridge in the world. And I agree with you. This bridge was built hundreds and hundreds of years ago and is as beautiful today as it was then. And yet we seem to struggle here in the United States to build that lasts longer than about 10 years. The Romans were really good at building things. So yes, in their defense, they have a long history of building impressive architectural marbles. Correct. Right? Correct. Very true.
So I have a short bridge story for you. Have you ever been to Lake Havasu?
I have been to Lake Havasu. Yes.
So you know that the original London Bridge is in Lake Havasu. It was moved there by the guy that started steel chainsaws. They just loved the bridge. They were tearing it down. And so if you want to see the real London Bridge, you got to go to Arizona.
There you go. Exactly. Only in America. In America.
So let's talk. I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek, and he always talks about find your why. So let's talk about your why for a moment. What initially sparked your interest in enhancing customer and employee experiences, and what really drives your passion for really making memorable interactions with people? And I know you started off, or at some point you were an attorney. So how'd you get here?
It has been an eclectic path, to say the least, Dr. Ray. Yeah, my journey, you know, I went straight from college where I studied government and international relations to law school, where I studied international law, litigation, and national security law. I had the chance to work for the CIA, for the Secret Service, for the White House Office of Counsel to the President. I was a business consultant. I was a criminal defense lawyer. I taught at the postgraduate level. I ran an ad agency for 15 years. And some people might look at that career and say, Joey, you know, you couldn't hold a job. What was going on? The reality is every job that I ever had, I moved to not because I hated the job I was in, but because I liked the idea of the new job even more. And the one thing that connects all those threads together, all those careers, all those different industries, is that the way you excelled in that job was by having a keen understanding of the human condition. Why do humans do the things they do? And what can we do to influence, persuade, convince them to do the things we'd like them to do? So when I was a criminal defense attorney, you know, how do I convince a jury to find my guy not guilty? When I was selling to Fortune 500 companies, how do I convince this purchaser to select our products and services as opposed to other vendors they were considering? And what this led me to realize, Dr. Ray, is that the great differentiator, the only differentiator that's frankly left in the marketplace today, is the experience you create for your customers and for your employees. You know, everybody's got the best possible price. Everybody's got 24/7, 365 access. We expect zero defects. We expect things to work the way they're designed to work. And if you kind of move the levels to everybody playing on that same field, the only thing that allows you to stand out from the competition is people saying, gosh, I just really like the way I feel when I do business with them. I like that they treat me like a human. I like that I feel like I matter, that I'm not a number, that I'm actually part of something bigger that they're trying to create.
Got to make them feel special.
Very true.
No doubt. So your book, Never Lose a Customer, talks about the first 100 days with a new customer, and it's been instrumental in helping clients deliver successful experiences worldwide. Can you elaborate on some of the strategies and how they might be adapted, say, for a chiropractor's office?
Absolutely. And I've had the pleasure of working with, you know, dozens and dozens of chiropractor offices to apply these principles. So even though the title is Never Lose a Customer Again, friends, let's just pretend it's Never Lose a Patient Again for the purposes of our conversation.
Sounds like
here.
A new book.
Right? Yeah, exactly. There could be no one. Yeah. Take the, just do a find and replace anywhere that I said customer in the first book, and you've got the chiropractor specific edition of Never Lose a Patient Again. There's a number of things that we want to keep in mind when we think about the experience we're creating for our patients. Number one, you have done this, you meaning the chiropractor who's listening to our show. You've done hundreds of adjustments, thousands of adjustments, maybe tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. But to that brand new patient coming to your office, they have no idea what your process is. They might not have ever had an adjustment, or they might have been with another chiropractor who's not as good or as talented or as artful as you are. And so they've got the baggage from those past experiences influencing them and setting their expectation for what they're going to get from working with you. It's also the case that chiropractors are operating within a larger umbrella of healthcare, which at least in the United States is not known for being remarkable or a positive experience. Yeah. Most people's experience with healthcare includes long wait times, not being able to get an appointment where you need to get an appointment. When you actually do show up, you sit in the lobby for an hour before you actually go get see your visit. And when you do get your visit, it's a flyby. They come in real quickly. There's no even how are you doing. It's a quick assessment of what's going on. Here's a script. Go get it and take some pills and call it a day. Whereas chiropractors have the opportunity to really set a completely different expectation and design a completely different experience for the patient, taking the time to know them as a human being, taking the time to figure out what's important to them. Not only why are they here to address maybe the acute pain or potentially chronic pain that they're dealing with, but to start to paint a vision of what their life will be once they're better, once they're not in this pain, once they're not dealing with this condition. And so it's an opportunity to not only, we talk about start with why here, start with the patient's why. Figure out why the patient is actually in the room and what you can do to help them achieve their long-term goals. I believe that every patient goes through 8 distinct phases in their relationship with you. The challenge is most chiropractors are only paying attention to about 3 or 4 of those phases.
You got to give me the 8, Joey.
I'll give you the 8. So the first one's the assess phase. This is where a prospective client's trying to decide whether or not they want to come be treated by you. They're checking out your website. They're looking at your advertisements. They're talking to other patients of yours. This is the period where they're assessing whether or not you're a good fit for them. And our opportunity is to create an experience in the assessment phase that shows that trust, shows that credibility, shows that relationship. We then move from the assess phase to the admit phase. In the admit phase, a prospective patient admits they have a problem or a need they believe you can help with. They sign on the dotted line. They schedule their first appointment. We then go to the affirm phase, phase 3. The affirm phase is the buyer's remorse phase, where the patient begins to doubt the decision they just made. Now, this is the crazy thing. We think we've got it. We've got them scheduled. They're coming in for their first visit. No, friends. They're anxious about that visit. They've got a lot of fear and doubt and uncertainty. They don't know what they're supposed to wear. They've never been to your office before. They may not be entirely sure where it's located. They may not be sure how long they're going to be there, what type of things they're going to be asked to do. Keep in mind, they're comparing you to other doctors. Okay. They're thinking, am I going to get blood taken while I'm here today? Am I going to get x-rays? Am I going to be asked to change into a hospital gown? What's going to happen? We might look at that and say, well, geez, no, we're not going to do any of those things. Maybe the x-rays, you know, but we're certainly not going to do blood draws and have you change into a hospital gown, but they have no context. So what are you doing in that affirm phase to reaffirm their choice to come and do business with you?
So perhaps what we should do on our website, since people self-educate today to make decisions, is we have a frequently asked questions. What about, you know, what to expect on your first visit? Will we relieve some of those fears or concerns?
So, Dr. Ray, absolutely. And it could be something as quick and easy to put together as an FAQ, or if you wanted to really set yourself apart from the other chiropractors in your community, maybe it's a video that starts in the parking lot. You're going to pull into the parking lot here. We've got 5 spaces reserved with our logo on them, so you know you're in the right space. Then you're going to walk in the front door, and you're narrating as the video is following this person through. And then you're going to meet Beth, our front desk receptionist. Beth's going to take your name. She's going to get some information for you. She's going to get you set up. Then she's going to guide you through the office, walking past our little exercise area, walking past these little reminder posters we have of the importance of hydrating, back into the office where you're going to meet Dr. Ray. Dr. Ray's then, and you're narrating this whole thing so they can watch. People love watching movies. Yep. Everybody gives this goldfish, you know, they're like, oh, humans have a shorter attention span than a goldfish. Well, fair enough if they're not being attracted to what they're watching. I know plenty of people that will sit and binge watch episode after episode on Netflix. They've got an attention span longer than a goldfish. It's just that they're being entertained. They're being visually and auditorially intrigued by what's happening. You can do the same thing.
Got it. All right. So we were on Affirm.
We then come, so phase 3 is Affirm. We then come to phase 4, Activate. This is that first real moment of truth when they show up for their first appointment. Now, again, if you've done your job educating them what to expect, now we're just delivering on what their expectations were. But this is also the opportunity to start to take things to the next level, to exceed their expectation, to have special little touches, interactions, things that happen that make them really feel seen, heard, and valued. We then come to the acclimate phase. Now, depending on your practice, this is where it might deviate a little bit. The acclimate phase is where the new patient signs up and gets used to your way of doing business over the course of several visits. Now, some of you have a first visit scan, come back for a second visit, give them the report, and then you present a package. Some do adjustments on the first visit and then are kind of moving into a package from there. Some are looking to always sell packages. Others are looking to just schedule the next visit. Depending on your business model, the acclimate phase is where most patients start to fall apart. And the reason they fall apart is they have no idea what they're actually moving towards. If you've sold them a package of 40 adjustments, when will I start to feel relief, doc? When will it start to feel good? Do I have to get to adjustment number 39 before I feel any changes? Or is it going to be adjustment number 4? Well, we know, those of us that have been involved in chiropractic care for dozens of years, that the answer is it depends, but we're certainly hoping to see significant progress well before that 39th visit if we're doing a 40-visit package. But the patient doesn't know this. So in the acclimate phase, you've got to hold their hand.
They need to understand it's a process, not an event.
Exactly. Yep. And they also need to know that somewhere along the process, they will be reaching specific milestones. And what are we doing to track those? Which actually brings us to the 6th phase, the accomplish phase. So the accomplish phase is when the patient achieves the goal that they had when they originally decided to become a patient. Now let's pretend I've got low back issues. And maybe my goal is, doc, I don't want to have low back issues. We know that if we can alleviate my low back issues with adjustments, that is a step in the right direction. But it's just a matter of time before my back goes out of alignment again, if I don't start making some other choices around the chair that I sit in at work, the type of food I'm eating, how I'm hydrating, all these other things that contribute to spinal health. If we've only pitched it as, well, you got to have an adjustment to feel better, then once they get better, they think they're done. They're like, well, I don't need to do any more of my visits. I'm good. Until their back bothers them again. And then what do? Are they going to say, oh, it's because I wasn't being healthy, I wasn't exercising, I wasn't eating it? They're going to say, no, it's because Dr. Ray didn't do a good job. He was supposed to cure me and he didn't. So we've got to have these conversations. We've got to manage the expectations. And when they do accomplish, which is the 6th phase, the goal that they had when they originally decided to be a patient, we need to celebrate with them. We need to mark these milestones in a meaningful way because they'll forget what their original goal was. We then come to phase 7, the adopt phase. This is when a patient becomes loyal to us and only us. They're not going to another chiropractor down the road. They're not trying one of these other modalities of care. They are committed to being a patient. And if, and only if, we've gotten them through all 7 of those phases, do we have the right, the privilege, to invite them into the 8th and final phase, the advocate phase, where they become a raving fan, singing our praises far and wide. They're writing reviews on Google. They're giving us testimonials on social. They're telling all their friends, hey, if there's anything going on with your body that feels not like the way you want it to feel, your first stop should not be a call to your GP. It should be a visit to the chiropractor who's going to help you figure out not only how to feel better, but to make the lifestyle changes that need to happen to not feel this pain again. Those are the 8 phases. But as I mentioned at the outset, there's a lot of chiropractors listening, and I say this from a place of respect and love. You might have just heard about phases you didn't even know existed, or had things that you're like, I never really even thought about that as it relates to my patient.
And that's why I wrote notes.
There you go. First step is being aware of what the journey is. And then the yep. second step is figuring out how are we going to make each phase in that journey remarkable.
You know, patients really do face a challenge when they're trying to select a chiropractor. A, they don't really know what, oftentimes they don't know what they're looking for. B, they base it on prior experiences. And let's face it, you open the yellow pages or you search on the internet and it's a roll of the dice. You may have someone who's strictly focused on nutrition. You may have someone who is focused on, you know, structural changes. You may have someone who's focused on pain relief. I mean, my practice was in a spine center with 13 MDs, so we were more of the pain relief model, but we would transition patients from the pain relief to wellness and making some lifestyle changes. But for the average patient, they have no idea. So docs, if you don't do anything else, take a few minutes, define who you are, how you practice, and make sure that's readily accessible to patients so they can see, here's what I do versus here's what you may have experienced. I think that is critical. It is our dear friend Aaron Reynolds talks about expectation without agreement. I have an expectation of what the patient is going to do. And if I want them to have lifelong care, but I don't have agreement, then when the pain's gone, they're gone. And so you feel like I failed as a chiropractor when in fact, you just really didn't have the agreement in place. And quite frankly, that patient may have only wanted pain relief and we got to give them what they want.
Absolutely.
And after about the third or fourth episode of them doing it their way, I'll have this little conversation. You know, Joey, you said you wanted to come in for pain relief, and that's fine. I'm happy to provide that. But the reality is, this is the fourth time you've been in this year. While I appreciate the business, there's a better way. If we treat you preventatively on a periodic basis, I may see you 6 or 8, 10 times in a year. Your way, I see you 10 or 12 times every time you have an episode. Let them know what you'd like to do at the front desk. I mean, just having that conversation to let them know what their options are that, you know, hey, we tried it your way. If you're not satisfied with that, there's a better way.
So, Dr. Ray, it's so true. And a couple things, if I may, to that point is I've dealt with a number of chiropractors who are so insistent that it's their way or the highway that they're driving a lot of people to the highway. And I'm not saying you should deviate from what you believe is the proper care for the patient, but we got to first acknowledge that the patient might have an idea of what they think will solve the problem. And if we show them that and they get a little bit of relief, okay, great. We can still, I'm fine as a customer, or if I'm a chiropractor, I would be fine with a healthy mix of patients who came in more acutely to treat things that came up, as well as ones that are on a long-term wellness plan with me and are going to be, it's okay to have both types of customers. What's not okay is to be trying to force fit people into a relationship that they're not ready for yet. I liken this to dating. Imagine you go on a first date with someone. You're single, they're single, you go on the first date, and before the waiter comes over with the menus, you say, so when do I get to meet your parents so we can talk about taking this to the next level? You're not going to even get your order placed before that person is going to leave the table and say, I'm not interested in rushing. This is way too fast, buddy. I haven't even placed my order. The same thing applies with our patients. We've got to build the relationship over time. And I understand we're all looking, you know, to get to that, you know, PVA that, you know, is higher than it is right now and double digit PVAs and that. I get that. But you get to that over time. You don't get to that by trying to force it in the first one. The last thing I'll say on this is the other thing that you need to make sure is explicitly stated on your website is how much this is going to cost.
Absolutely.
I see so many chiropractors that are like, well, it kind of depends, Fine, I get that it depends until you do the assessment, but will you give me a range? Are we talking about a $50 investment, a $500 investment, or a $5,000 investment? Do you take insurance or not? In what context do you take insurance or not? How is this going to work? That's something that can easily be explained in a 3 or 4 minute narrated video with the doctor that has an accompanying, you know, transcription of what was said that's broken down into more of like headers and footers and, you know, FAQ list. If you give that information, you will actually do two things. Number one, people will come to your office primed, ready to pay for the care. And for those for whom your pricing model is out of their reach, they'll never schedule an appointment. Now, some people are like, but Joey, I missed the chance then to try to convince them to mortgage their house so they can pay for me. No, if they're not your target market, they're not your target market. You don't even want them taking slots.
Yeah, that's true. You know, part of what we do at Cairo Health is help doctors with their financial policies and plans. And one of the things that we teach or we talk about is what's called the shopper call, where the dreaded question that every CA hates to hear. Well, how much is the first visit? Well, in our profession, we've taught them to do what I call the chiropractic two-step. Well, Ms. Jones, there is no set fee. It all depends on what the doctor finds necessary. I'll be happy to schedule for a complimentary consultation. And what did you tell the patient? Not a damn thing. But if you're able to say, Ms. Jones, it does depend on what the doctor finds necessary, but it could also depend on what your insurance company requires, meaning deductibles, copays, then you can have the conversation about it's not uncommon for a first visit to run, you know, $300, $350. And have the conversation. Well, if they say, well, I don't have insurance, not a problem. We're part of Cairo Health USA. You can join that $49. And the most your first visit is $150. Do you prefer mornings or afternoons? I can't tell you how many doctors I hear complaining about, well, new patients call, but they never show up. It's because you did the chiropractic two-step. Give them what they're looking for. I'll tell you another quick story. It's kind of like going to Ruth's Chris Steakhouse and saying, I'd like to order a filet. And you ask how much it is. And she said, well, it depends on how hungry you are.
Right. Exactly.
Probably not going back to
that restaurant. Not going to order that plate. Well, and here's the crazy thing. In what industry other than healthcare do we not know the price before the conversation starts? If I go online on Amazon, I know the price before I click put it in my cart. If I go into any retail establishment, I see the price tag on either on the shelf or on the item before I even pick it up. If I go to a restaurant, to your point, I see the price tag on the menu. Why are we so skittish about saying what our fees are? To me, what that says is we don't actually believe that it has the value we're quoting.
That's
often what it is. Somebody's like, oh, well, I think we're charging too much. Well, then sit down and look at your books and figure out if you need to adjust your prices. But don't put that uncertainty onto a patient or a prospective patient who already has a lot of uncertainty about why they're in pain and whether or not you're going to be able to help them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in healthcare, it depends on who's paying the bill as to how much it costs. That's the reference to, well, how hungry are you? You know, we have our PI fee, our workers' comp fee, our mother, father, sister, brother fee, our buy 10 visits, get one free fee. And until the patient self-identifies that they're self-pay versus insurance, that's why they can't quote the fee. But if you have a set fee schedule and you know what your discounts are and you can have that conversation, I'll guarantee you, you will see more of your new patients who scheduled actually show up. So we're going to take about a 30-second break here to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back with you. Welcome back, everyone. We're going to continue our conversation with Joey Coleman. I wrote down 8 things just out of that first little segment. I hope you guys did it as well. And I'm not even in practice anymore. I just love this stuff. So, Joey, you know, when you talk about that first 100 days, and I'll tell you experience I had from someone who utilized you, our good friend Nathan Unruh. So I was a client of Sidecar at one point, and I have the most amazing Cutco expensive knives with my name on it. And when we look in healthcare, we have some constraints around or from the Office of Inspector General, like you can't give anything of value to a patient more than $15 or a total of $75 in a year, or you can't reward referring providers more than $15 or $75 in a year. So my question is, when you're gifting or rewarding, have you found that the dollar amount is really relevant, or is it just the intent to show your appreciation that's effective? Help us kind of navigate that.
Yeah, it's some of both. I mean, the dollar amount is relevant in the sense that you don't want to get out of compliance. You don't want to, you know, spend $100 when in your jurisdiction you're limited to $75, right? You want to pay attention to that. But if I were to ask everybody listening today to make a list of the 20 best gifts you ever received in your life, and somebody was to sit down and actually write out and fill the list, 20 best gifts, statistically, the majority of those gifts were less than $50 in cost. It wasn't about the money spent. It was about the intentionality of the gift. It was about the gift being opened by the person and them seeing it and saying, oh, they know me. They know me better than I know myself. They were listening and paying attention when I was talking months ago and said that my favorite type of ice cream is Rocky Road. That I said I loved reading, you know, fiction novels, historical fiction novels from ancient Rome. They were paying attention when I was talking, and then they provided the gift accordingly. I have seen incredibly powerful gifting done for easily less than $15 per patient when it was targeted for the individual. Now, where this gets difficult for someone running a practice is lots of times when you decide, oh, we want to do some patient gifts, the thought process is, what's the cheapest gift I can buy that I can buy in bulk that we can put our logo on? All three of those thoughts are bad thoughts if the goal is to create a remarkable experience for the patient. The cheapest, you don't want to go with the cheapest. You want to go with something that is quality compared to, you know, what you're getting, you know, and there can be a $20 quality gift if you're giving someone something that is a quality item. Then you don't want to buy stuff in bulk. And the reason you don't want to buy in bulk is everybody knows it's purchased in bulk. When you got your Cutco knives with your name on it, yes, the knife might have been purchased in bulk, but the engraving was done specifically for you. And it's also the case that when we are putting a logo on something, I'm not opposed to you having promotional products. I'm not opposed to you having t-shirts and water bottles and stress balls and massagers that have your logo on it. I'm opposed to you thinking that's a gift.
Yeah,
it's a marketing tool.
Yeah,
it's a promotional tool. I'm not opposed to that, but stop deluding yourself and saying, oh, this is our patient gift. No, this is our patient marketing tool that we're giving them. If you call it that, I'm fine with it. A gift is something that transcends a marketing experience. It's no one ever got a gift with the recipient's logo on it and thought this is a gift. If you doubt the validity of that statement, just imagine yourself on Christmas morning or your birthday or one of the nights of Hanukkah. You open this beautifully wrapped package. And it's a sweater from your grandma, and it has her name on it. Like, you're not going to wear that sweater. You love your Nana, but you're not going to wear the sweater. And some people are like, Joey, that's ridiculous. That would never happen. Well, I see plenty of chiropractors are like, I know, let's order 500 hats with our logo on it. Let's order 500 t-shirts with our logo on the front and the 8 nutritional tips on the back. People aren't going to wear these. They're going to give them to Goodwill. They're going to give them to their kids. They're going to become their workout clothes that they wear in their basement and they never wear anyone else. You don't even get the benefit of them being a walking billboard, but they also never signed up to be a walking billboard.
That's true. I can tell you from experience, I had a patient years ago that was really just getting into horses, and because their grandfather had, and it was just, you know, it was special to them. And my wife and I happened to be at a store one day, and there was just the book of horses, all the different kinds. And it was like $15 book. And I said, you know, Miss So-and-so mentioned that, and I bought it for her. And oh my gosh, it's like, she just teared up. And it's like, I didn't mean to make you cry, lady, but I remember you talking about that. So we do have to listen. And I love the distinction between, you know, if you give it away, and we give away t-shirts to all new patients. We do that with Cairo Health, because people actually do wear those, because we give them a $50 gift certificate at the events. but you know, that's more the distinction I love is marketing versus something personal. And I love hearing that you really should just be listening and pick up on things. And I always have a staff member in the room with me. Just have them keep a little note of what Miss Jones says is important to her. And when you get the opportunity, find something special.
Dr. Ray, I love it. And that, if I may briefly, if everybody listening did only one thing differently after listening to this episode, and that was to create a place in your patient record system where you can record personal and emotional attributes about this person. They love to go hiking on vacation. They're really into fly fishing. Their favorite city to visit is New York, and they go once a year. Whatever it may be, the little interesting picadillos about them. They're a huge Star Wars fan. They love playing with Lego. They've got 3 grandkids that are the pride and joy of their life. Whatever it may be, it doesn't matter as long as we're recording that. And remember that ink fades slower than memory, and a cursor on a computer screen fades slower than ink. So we can record it in a way that the rest of our team can see it. You will change your business. Now, the other piece, I'll give advice briefly to all the practice owners that are listening in. If you're doing this for your patients, are you doing it for your team members? Because my gut instinct is you have a patient CRM, but you don't have an employee ERM. You're not keeping track of what your employees' favorite things are, what your employees love to do in their spare time. These are huge and easy opportunities for you to increase your employee engagement, increase your team member retention by doing the exact same thing you're doing to a patient. Just turn it inside and focus it on your people.
Oh, I agree. If you take care of your people, they'll take care of you. That's certainly been my experience. You know, I love what you said about recording what's important to patients. You know, I think that's really critical when doctors make recommendations. You know, if I'm a subluxation-based provider, or if I'm a evidence-based provider, whatever it is, you know, we outline what our goal is for the patient. We want to eliminate subluxations, or we want to get you pain-free. But what I found in practice is finding what's important. If it is, I want to be able to pick up my grandkids. I want to be able to work in the garden. I've yet to have anybody come in to my practice, or did have in 38 some odd years that said, I want to see if I've got a vertebral submarine, or what do you call them? Vertebral subluxation. You know, that never happened. They came right. and said, you know, we'll see in Mississippi, doc, or people, guys that will hurt all year long. But a week before deer season, man, we're
miracle cares.
I was just like, holy crap, I can't go deer hunting. So find out what's important to your patient and make that the goal of care and keep them being able to do that. All right. So when you talk about the first 100 days, and we should do something for them in that 100 days. What kind of frequency, or is this just in the 100 days, make sure you do something, or are there a series of things that you recommend? So what kind of frequency during the 100 days, and then what about after the 100 days?
Yeah, so two thoughts. The reason the first 100 days matters so much is because 20 to 70% of your patients will decide to stop being a patient in the first 100 days. That's what the research shows. 20 to 70% of your new patients will
walk in the front door and out the back
before the 100-day anniversary. That's why we want to pay attention to the first 100 days. In terms of frequency, do you want to communicate with them every day of the first 100 days? Absolutely not. That's overwhelming. We got a stage 5 clinger. They're not going to be interested in that type of relationship. But what you need to be doing is saying, all right, when are they coming for a visit? What is the communication between visits? What are the things that are designed to be moving them forward in their care? What are the things that are designed to be deepening our relationship with them? Most chiropractors, I think it would be fair to say that in the first 3 months are going to have north of a dozen visits in most packages, right? So how is visit 3 different from visit 7? Not from a clinical point of view, but from a patient experience point of view. Once they've gotten used to how the office is set up and where they need to go and how they sign in and what they need to do, what little special things are you dropping on top of that? Are we doing patient appreciation days? Are we doing special little things? Are we having, you know, prizes where, you know, hey, anybody that gets an adjustment today, I went to a chiropractor, my local chiropractor here 3 weeks ago, and it was anybody that got an adjustment that day got to spin the wheel and win a prize. Now, the prizes included things like essential oils, a discount off a massage. There was a grand prize that was a 90-minute massage for free. And I'm in the lobby with 7 or 8 other people who are queued up to spin the wheel. And they look like little kids on Christmas. I mean, they're excited. They're ready to go. And I'm thinking to myself, this is brilliant, because this wheel can go behind the table and then come out again 2 months from now or 3 months from now and create another day where people are intrigued. It's something interesting. It's something exciting. The last thing I'll say on this is there are different ways you can communicate with your patients. I believe that there are 6. There's in-person interactions. There's emails. There's physical mail or snail mail, right? The original inbox, sending them something in the post. And that can be something as simple as a thank you letter or a small little thing for them to read. There's videos. There are phone calls, and there are gifts and presents. So the question that I would suggest folks ask themselves is, which of those communication tools are we using, and which of those channels are we not using? And maybe there's an opportunity to try something different.
Yep. Awesome. So employee retention and engagement, as you know, are critical for the success of any business. What are some of the common challenges that organizations are facing now in retaining their employees? And how do some of the, tell me about a couple of the principles from Never Lose an Employee Again to overcome those challenges.
Yeah. So the state of the employee today is unlike anything we have experienced as employers in human history.
No doubt.
This isn't just a little blip on the radar screen, folks. There has been a landmark shift in employee experience and employee expectations with the combination of remote work, with the ability of the gig economy, and people can make money on the side driving for Uber or Lyft. That expectation of I'm going to come to work at 8, I'm going to be there till 5, I'm going to take my 30 minutes for lunch, and I'm going to work in this job for 30 years, those days are gone.
Sure.
So if you're a business leader and you're waiting for those days to come back, I'm telling you, you should just retire now, because they're never coming back. We have 2.3 open jobs in this country for every one worker in the United States. So even if every worker from the age of 18 to 65 was fully gainfully employed, we would still have millions of empty jobs. Yep. This isn't changing anytime soon, because you know how long it takes to make a new worker? 18 years plus 9 months. Okay? Like,
start working at 18 and aren't living in mama's basement.
Absolutely. So we're not digging out of this anytime soon. Okay? So what are we going to do? Well, interestingly enough, the research on employee retention is very similar to the research on patient retention. For example, 40% of new hires will quit before the 1-year anniversary. 40%. of new hires quit before the 1 year anniversary. On average, 22 to 30% quit in the first 100 days. 4% will show up for work on the first day, spend the day with you, go home that night, and never come to work again. 4% of new hires will work one day, and that's it.
I can beat that. I hired a girl, gave her clinic manual, and her first day was the next day, and I get to the office at 7 in the morning, and the damn manual's leaning up against the door.
Never even came for the first day. Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. Dr. Ray, there's some fantastic research that Gartner did. They interviewed 3,000 people who had accepted jobs in the United States, and they got them, okay, you accepted a job. Your job's going to start in 2 weeks. They then went to everybody on the first day of their job. They went to interview them and say, how was the first day? What they found is that 50% of the people had taken a different job in the intervening time between accepting the first one and second. And of the 50% that actually showed up, 47% of those said they'd be willing to entertain another offer. This is the state of employment today.
There is no loyalty.
So what do we do about it? Yeah, there's no loyalty. But here's the thing, Dr. Ray, we weren't loyal to our employees either. A lot of us. Now, some of us were, but a lot of us weren't. We kind of made the bed we're all sleeping in now. Here's
Thanks
what you
to
need
Jack
to do. Exactly.
Get rid of the bottom 10%. What kind of loyalty does that create?
Yeah. And so many people worshiped at the altar of GE's way of top grading employees. And there's a lot of people that still today are like, we only hire A and A plus employees. Great. Well, you're making it difficult for everybody else, because when you have that attitude, people presume that they can't find work anywhere. The secret is to take those 8 phases we talked about on the patient experience and apply them to the employee experience. It's the same 8 phases. I'll go through them real fast because you know what they are. In the assess phase, they're trying to assess whether or not they want to come work with you. They're looking at your job at listing. They're going through your hiring process. Then we come to the accept phase. This is the only one that changes the name. In a patient side, it's admit. On the employee side, it's accept. Why? Because they accept your job offer. You extend an offer, they accept it. Then they go to that affirm phase. It's not buyer's remorse here. It's new hire's remorse, where they begin to doubt the decision they just made to come work for you. This is the gal who left the binder leaning against the door. She got the job. She got it. She's like, wait a second. Never mind. I don't want this. We then come to the activate phase, that first day on the job. What are you doing to make that first day on the job as remarkable as possible? But then don't forget, they immediately move to the acclimate phase, the second day on the job, the third, the fifth, the eighth. Most organizations think intentionally about what they want the first day of work to be. They don't spend a lot of time thinking about day 2 or day 3 or day 8 or day 12.
No, you got to have an onboarding process.
You got to have an onboarding process. And the most successful onboarding process is last guess how long? Yeah, that'd be 100 days. And you build it out over time. Then you acclimate them as part of that. Then you come to the accomplish phase, where the employee achieves the goal they had when they originally decided to accept your job offer. The adopt phase, where they become loyal to you and only you. They're not going to take calls from headhunters or be intrigued by a new chiropractic office opening down the street that they're going to work out. And last but not least, if you've really done your job, you get them to the advocate phase, where they're writing reviews on Glassdoor, where if you're looking for someone, they're bringing all the amazing people they know in their personal lives to come work for you, because they know this is the greatest place to work in your community.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You know, I think that is so, so critical. I have for years, every time I have an employee that we're looking at hiring, I tell them, I said, my job is to make sure this is the best job you've ever had. And they look at me like, what? I've never heard that before. And, you know, I explained to them, I said, if I do my job, I'm going to remove obstacles. I'm going to make this the best place you ever work, which means that I don't have to spend time interviewing, rehiring, retraining. So it's in my best interest. And, you know, if we would stop looking at employees as strictly an expense and look at them as the people who help us accomplish our goals, things would be entirely different.
Dr. Ray, it is so true. But I'll say this, for the people that are more emotionally inclined or humanistically inclined, what you just said is going to resonate well with them. But with all due respect, there's probably some folks listening that are a little more spreadsheet inclined or bottom line fiscally inclined. All right, this is just for those folks. The cost of replacing a worker is somewhere between 100 and 300% of their annual salary. That's what it costs you to do the job listings, to go through the interview process, your loss in productivity while you're waiting to fill the position, the staff time it takes to go through and re-interview and re-onboard and retrain. So ask yourself this, would you rather keep the person you have and teach them, educate, work with them to be the type of employee you want, coach them up, or would you rather start the cycle all over again? again. And if you'd rather start the cycle all over again, it's literally lighting money on fire. And you will continue to do that until you change how you approach managing and working with your team.
I believe it was Stephen Covey who said, you know, I've seen doctors who have fired multiple CAs. You know, he said, well, I just can't find anybody good to work. And I believe it, Covey said, when you think the problem's out there, that is the problem.
100%.
Yeah.
The first thing you want to ask if you've got an employee who isn't delivering the way you want them to, the first question you should ask is, where did we fall short as the employer with our training, with our onboarding, with our communication? Because I can almost guarantee 99 times out of 100, we can find plenty of growth fodder right there to work with on how we could have done this better and create the kind of scenario where our employees can thrive.
I agree. So let's pivot a little bit. You've traveled over 52 countries, like I said, on all seven continents, and I'm sure you've had some amazing experiences riding down the volcano. I'm sure it's at the top of that. How have those adventures influenced how you approach customer and employee experiences?
I love this question. I love that. I'd say in two key ways. Number one, the great differentiator globally is the experiences you have. You know, very few people go on vacation somewhere and come back and their favorite memory is the souvenir. They buy the souvenir and they have it in their house maybe to remind them of this. But 9 times out of 10, it's the photograph of the beautiful vista. It's the memory of the laughter and the story. You know, it's me being on the Ponte Vecchio singing love songs. I don't remember if I bought any souvenirs, but I can tell you what it was like standing there under the starlight singing love songs. And it was amazing. It was this great experience that I had. So number one, it reinforced in me that it is experience, experience, experience. Number two, it also taught me that with all due respect to our cultural differences, humans are humans, the planet round. Humans want to have a good life. They want to do an honest day's work for an honest day's wage. They want their kids to be more successful than they were. They want to lift up and support their communities. They want to have opportunities for laughter, opportunities for joy, opportunities for learning. We're all looking for the same things, but we get so caught up, I think, as a species in this differentiation of, well, I believe this and you believe that, therefore we're not going to talk to each other. And we see that more prevalent in the United States today than at any time in recent history. Just because we're not voting for the same person doesn't mean we need to be arch enemies. Just because we interpret different aspects of the law differently doesn't mean we need to be arch enemies. At least have a conversation. At least be curious as to why that person believes something different than you believe. That's where all the growth and learning and excitement comes from in society. It's not in holding ground to what we believe true. It's in learning what others believe too and seeing how we can mesh those together to create a woven fabric of humans.
Yeah, you know, that's another takeaway from Stephen Covey's book. He says, seek first to understand. Because if you don't understand why someone thinks different, then you just tend to polarize. By the way, y'all can probably hear my grandson dog, Decker, in the background. Apparently, he's chiming in.
Nice. I love it. Even the animal kingdom agrees with this philosophy.
Absolutely. He is in full agreement. So, since you wrote your first book, I think it's been about 6 years ago, have you noticed any, or are there any new strategies that have emerged that weren't in that? And again, I'm thinking in terms of particularly in employees, well, even for customers, we've got PC and pre-COVID and post-COVID, and everything has changed. So the things that you wrote about 7 years ago, and again, I understand the human experience is everybody kind of wants the same thing, but have you really seen anything that says, wow, that's changed since 2017?
Yeah, I definitely have, Dr. Ray. I mean, I think the biggest things that have changed is that our barriers to switching are lower than they've ever been. What I mean by that is if I'm a patient of your chiropractic office, my ability to go become a patient at a different chiropractor is easier now than it's ever been. There are more chiropractors. There are more offices. You know, if I'm buying your products and you're trying to sell, you know, essential oils and ice packs in a little storefront in front of your office, I can buy those on Amazon for half as expensive. And by the way, they'll arrive free of charge this afternoon. I don't have to come into your office to pick them up. So we see a huge increase in consumers and patients moving towards convenience, moving towards this idea of anticipation. Like one of the things that I think is fascinating is when I go on Amazon and I put something into the cart, that little thing pops up that says people who bought this also bought these other things. Regularly, I'm seeing things that I'm interested in. Mm. The algorithm knows me better than I know myself. We can do that same type of thing in our practices. What does the patient actually need? You find out that the patient is, you know, has three kids at home. Well, those kids might need adjustments too. And it's less about, hey, I'm trying to get more patients to increase my revenue, and more about saying to mom or dad, hey, you mentioned that your son is playing football. We see a lot of kids getting real, real problems in their spines because of the impacts associated with football. If at any point your child is complaining about, you know, a sore back or something, know that you can bring them in and we're happy to look at that. They fall under our friends and family umbrella. We'll take good care of them too. But what I don't want to do is have you miss treating something early on that could cause huge problems for that child a decade from now. So it's being aware of what's going on and anticipating things that they might need. Last thing I'll say is on the employee side, it has never been easier to find a job than it is right now. And the reason for that is COVID came along, and even employers who thought there's no way we could ever work remotely were forced to work remotely. And as a result, they figured some things out. Now, I always joke with our mutual friend, Dr. J, that until someone invents the haptic adjustment vest, where you put on a vest and you press some buttons and it adjusts my spine, that chiropractors are good. There's always going to be an in-person component. But right. I know a number of chiropractors that their scheduling is done by someone who never comes into the office.
Sure.
You know, they've outsourced. If the phone rings, it doesn't ring in office. It rings somewhere else at someone's home where they're able to take care of patients. And it's just a matter of time. I don't see us on the horizon where chiropractors are doing adjustments remotely, but every other part of the practice is going to be able to be done remotely, if not now, in very short order.
Yeah,
and that's a challenge. But that's also an opportunity.
It absolutely
is. Huge opportunity. Because if you're having problems finding talented people in your little town or in your little community, well, now the world can apply for a job if you're willing to let people dial in and work remotely.
Yeah, I think something else that's going to happen as a result of being able to find employees, and you combined all the things that you mentioned before, there's also our good friend, I don't know if you know Aaron Reynolds, but Aaron works with us and has for years, and he did a deep dive on employees and availability of them. And one of the other things that's really going to hit us, if not today, within about 10 years, is we are not having babies like we used to. And so there's really a decline in the U.S. population, which is going to compound the effect of two jobs for every employee. So get ready, guys. Get ready, girls. I mean, changes are coming, as they say.
Yeah. And by the way, this is happening on every continent on the planet except one, Africa. Africa is the only continent on the planet where the number of people in 18 to 35 is increasing instead of decreasing. So I was giving a speech last week to an audience in Omaha, and I said, who in the room has an Africa employment strategy? And one guy raised his hand. I got to tell you, Dr. Ray, I've posed that question to thousands and thousands of audience members. I've never had someone raise their hand. I went up to him afterwards. I said, what are you doing? He said, we've got a call center in Tunisia that we're dialing up. We've got folks there. We're doing some of our customer service out of South Africa, and we've got folks coming there. And it's, you need to think strategically. And I understand most chiropractors are not running offices that have hundreds and hundreds of employees. But what I am saying, and I think you'd agree with this, Dr. Ray, is you better be thinking strategically about where you're going to be finding your team members. And for a lot of chiropractors, a huge untapped opportunity is within your patient base and within your patient base of people who have retired. Mm-hmm. One of the fastest growing areas is to take people who've retired and are coming back for a second job. They don't want to work 40 hours a week, but they'll happily do 15 or 20 at the front desk just to see other people and to have interaction. And by the way, without dating you or me, Dr. Ray, these are folks that came up in a generation that knew what work really defined, that defined work the same way you and I define work. So you know, show up early, be on time, deliver with a smile, do the right thing. You know, you're going to be able to tap into resources that previously a lot of employers didn't think of as being a viable workforce pool.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, in years past when people retired at 65 sometime, well, that's when Colonel Sanders started Kentucky Fried Chicken. So they're not done yet. The model that's out there that really embraces that, Chick-fil-A.
Yes.
They hire a lot of retirees. And man, let's face it, they crank the food out. They're not old. They're not slow. You know, they're an integral part of their team. So they've been smart and do that. All right. Let's have fun for a couple seconds.
Let's do it.
Who's your hero and why?
Oh, let's see. I got to pick one. I'm going to, for this answer, I'll pick my mom. And the reason I'm going to pick my mom is she was the hardest job in the world. She was a full-time stay-at-home mom raising 7 kids. And let me tell you, while she may not have gotten the accolades outside the house that she deserved for the time and effort and intentionality she put in, I think the stay-at-home parent, if you're lucky enough in a family to have a stay-at-home parent, I think their job is exponentially harder than the parent who leaves the house to go work outside the house.
No doubt. And they don't get overtime.
They don't get overtime. They don't get vacation. They can't call in sick. And at the end of the day, 9 times out of 10, they don't get a lot of thanks for it until years later, sometimes decades later. We can do better looking out for those that look out for us when we're growing up.
All right. One more. What talent do you have that most people don't know about?
What talent do I have? We already kind of talked about the singing. That's one I enjoy. How about this one? And this is a weird one. I can see down to almost the pixel level when things aren't in alignment. This comes from my days of working as a graphic designer and working on things. So like if I walk into a room, I can tell you if the picture is crooked, even if it's off by a millimeter, and the little OCD starts riding on in me and I'll go over and I'll slightly adjust it. So
I can see alignment that way.
Yeah, I can see alignments and misalignments very easily, which who knows, maybe in another life
I'll come back. The chiropractor.
Exactly. I was just going to say.
So if people or companies are interested in talking with you about improving their customer and an employee experience, how can they best reach out to you or follow you on social media?
Yeah, the best place to find me is on my website, joeycoleman.com. That's J-O-E-Y, like a baby kangaroo or a 5-year-old, you know. Coleman, C-O-L-E-M-A-N, like the camping equipment, but no relation. Joeycoleman.com. My books are called Never Lose a Customer Again and Never Lose an Employee Again. You can find those wherever you find books and in whatever format you like. We've got a hardcover if you want to take notes in the margins. We've got an ebook if you like reading on your Kindle. And if you've liked the sound of my voice on this podcast, we've got an audiobook for each of those that I narrated.
Awesome. And I'm sure the How to Never Lose a Patient is coming soon.
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
So thanks for spending some time with us today, Joey. It's been a real pleasure. Awful lot of great information you've shared with us. And thank you to everyone who's listening to the podcast. Please subscribe and share with your friends and let us know who you'd like to hear from in the future. And we'll do our best to get them on. If you want to learn more about ChiroHealth USA and how we can help you develop a compliant, profitable discount strategy that will absolutely grow your practice, income, and profitability, call us at 888-719-9990 or visit our website at CHUSA, that's C-H-U-S-A, like it is up there on the sign, to find out why ChiroHealth USA is the network that works for chiropractic and you. Thanks so much, Joey.
Thanks, Dr. Ray.